It's Chris and Brian Jones, your real estate advocates, community connectors, talking Charlotte and York County area real estate and interviewing business owners, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
All right, 5, 4, 3, 2, hit it, Chris.
Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast, your community connectors, real estate advocates. 803-810-2230 if you have any questions, comments, or concerns about real estate. Or you can go to thejoneszones.com, thejoneszones with an S.com. Today we are joined by Rock Thomas,
who
is an awesome guy. Can't wait to dive into this one. How are you doing today, Rock?
Doing phenomenal. Very excited to be here with you boys and talk about life and success and failure and all kinds of good stuff.
I hear you, man. Can't wait to get into it. So Rock Thomas of Rock Thomas International, the world's number one whole life success expert. He's a real estate mogul, an author, a speaker, a life coach, and more. His programs blend his extensive knowledge about personal development with cutting-edge success formulas designed to produce whole life wealth. So Rock, welcome to the Jones Zone, man. Good to have you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to hear that because for years, my primary focus since I was a little kid was on money. And then once you start to base, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you start to realize once you get those things covered, then you go through a phase of buying all the toys that you think will make you happy, the boats and the motorcycles and the drum set and all that sort of thing. And then you get through that kind of midlife crisis-ish. And then you get to this other phase, hopefully, in your life where you realize that it's about, you know, evolving as a human and becoming enlightened, and the emotional, mental experience that you have going through life. The quality of life is great, the material world is great, but ultimately it's that conversation that you guys have in your mind with yourself, and I have with myself, that is the quality of your life. So hopefully we'll have a chance to talk a bit about that, because that's kind of where my passion lies.
Yeah, man, I mean, if you don't mind, I know that was a quick introduction on my part, but if you don't mind, share a little bit of your personal story and some of your professional background, and you know, take us back to that farm in Canada and just kind of tell us about Rock Thomas and, you know, all the journey you've been on.
Yeah, I mean, if people have seen my Goldcast videos being seen by about 72 million people, then they know a little bit of the story, but the expanded version, at the age of 5, my parents got divorced. I was living in the suburbs. I lived with my mom for 3 years, but I was seeking attention, so I set fires and got in fights and stuff like that. My mom was a bit of a gypsy, so she wasn't around that much. It was back in the day when parents actually could have their kids come home from school and not be there. So I kind of got into trouble, so she sent me off to live with my dad, who remarried on a farm. I was then the youngest of 7 kids, and again, struggled for attention. So the way I got my father's attention was to do all the chores around the house and around the farm, and to build things and to do things for him, solve problems for him, paint this, dig that, fix a barbed wire fence. And I soon started to realize that hard work became my method of love. So for the first 20 years of my life, though, I was in my late 20s, I just focused on working hard, not with my mind, but with my hands. I drove a taxi, I was a carpenter, I built decks, I did anything that could be, you know, labor intensive, because I didn't have a belief, it wasn't installed by my father, that, you know, you can use creativity to win, you can be an entrepreneur. It was, you know, one day you're gonna have to work hard like me, and get down in there and work hard, you know, there's no time to play. Go feed the horses and muck the barn, and you know, you had things that happened on a farm that weather determined that you needed to now not take 1 hour to feed the horses, but you needed to take 2 or 3 because the pipes burst and you had to carry buckets of water out to the field. So you learned lessons, and I learned to become incredibly resourceful. In my mind, fortunately for me, is there's no, will it happen? It's when will it happen? I will always find a way, no matter what, because of that training I got. But the flip side of every coin is another story. And that story was, I felt terribly alone. And I was bullied by my brothers and sisters. We didn't have a TV. The kids talked about TV shows at school, and I couldn't relate because I didn't know what they're talking about. Happy Days. You guys are too young to know that show.
I don't know Happy
Days. You know, they were all talking about it, and I couldn't relate. So I felt incredibly alone. And when you feel alone, you either get a gun and you go into schools and shoot people to get that sense of significance, or you find a way to win. Especially men, we need a place, an arena to win. If you and I play tennis and I kick your ass, you're not going to come out every day for an ass kicking forever. You're going to find another place. Hey, Rock, you want to try chess? You're going to find a place to win. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I looked for a place to win. And because my brother beat me up so much, I learned to run really fast to get away from him. And one day I was playing football at school at recess, and the kids were like, okay, I was like the last kid picked. But when they threw me the ball and I caught it, nobody could catch me. Nobody. I was so freaking shifty and fast from years of running away in the paddocks and the fields from my brother. And that's when I started to learn that every adversity has a seed within it. Every obstacle that you're going through, you're thinking, this sucks. I don't want to be a busboy and work for that stupid waiter who treats me like crap. That's a training for something. Everybody's a teacher. And I start to get excited, maybe not consciously, but realize that if I kept on doubling down on my efforts, if I kept on showing up, that I could really have what other people didn't have in their life. So I did that till I was in my late 20s, and I got the phone call from my stepmom that my father was diagnosed with cancer. And I had by then amassed 3 properties in real estate. I had a senior citizen home. I was working in the airlines, and I was, you know, on my way. I had gained a little bit of confidence from one mentor in my mid-20s, but I was still, the inner narrative of my voice was still that skinny, loser, stupid, dyslexic, introverted kid. So every day when I went, and I see this now that I run businesses, people that come in early to work and stay late, and they're paid a salary to do the job, but they're so fearful they're not good enough, that they make up for it by working stupid hours because they don't believe in themselves. And I was that person. So I would do the job, a 40-hour week job. I would take 60 hours a week to do it to make sure that I wouldn't get fired and that I would get promoted. So I get the call, and about a year and a half later, after taking care of him, because my goal was to be loved by my dad, for my dad to be proud of me. So I was always looking for ways. I did it for many years by working hard, but when that no longer served because he wasn't looking at my work, this was an opportunity for me to do it, make it right by taking care of him. So I left my job in Montreal. I went to Australia and I started to take care of my dad. And when I came back a year and a half later, I had paid off his debt because he was terrible with money. And that was a money blueprint that we can talk about that's important. And at the same time, I my relationship died. I lost all my investments because I didn't know how to manage them. And I ended up back on my mom's couch. And it was through desperation that I got into real estate. And I was terrible. The first year I made one sale. And then after that, this one guy noticed it. He goes, you have this incredible work ethic, Rock. And I learned that on the farm. And he goes, but you're really working stupid. And I'm like, oh, thanks a lot. He goes, if you would actually be coachable, I could mentor you and you could be probably one of the greatest real estate agents ever. And I'm like, me? Are you kidding me? Because remember, I had an identity. The words that follow I am follow you. I had an identity that I was this laborer, that I would earn minimum wage, that who would pay me to consult with them on buying a home? So I had that identity. It's like a skinny fat person, right? This person who's really fat and then gets skinny, they still feel fat. Mm-hmm. I was that identity inside. Anyway, fast forward a couple of years, this mentor helped me believe in myself, give me the tools, give me the structure. And within a few years, I was making, selling 100 homes a year. Then I bought the company and I turned it into $1 billion a year of sales. And I was making $1.3 million a year. And my whole identity started to shift. And that's when I got into personal development, wrote a book and started helping people. And I've gone on to 36 streams of income and creating ecosystems where the spirit of an individual, regardless of your upbringing, can thrive.
Yeah, that's quite a journey, man. So you worked really hard and got set back, and then by 30, you had to start all over. How important was it to find that mentor? I know you've mentioned the word mentor a few times already. What is the importance of finding a mentor, and how do people go about finding one?
Well, that's a great question. And here's what I would recommend is that you look for somebody that you respect and admire. And I'll break those two down. Somebody you admire, in my case, was this guy. He drove a Mercedes, which was something that, you know, I admired. He wore a three-piece suit back in the day. That was cool. Back in the day when I had hair, he had really good hair, which I admired. And he was a married man, and his family worked in this real estate office. So I admired his values, who he was as an individual on the planet. And I respected the results he got in the world. He was a man of his word, and he was the most successful realtor in our area. So I think number one is you have to look for somebody you respect and admire. What you need to bring to the table are two things: a work ethic and passionate curiosity. You need to be willing to learn, and I was willing to learn. I was willing for him to pour into me, run out there and do exactly what he said, not question it, not doubt it, not challenge him, but say, point me in the direction and I will do it. I went on to do the same thing with Tony Robbins. 2000, I went to his course, and
Which one?
I did 19 of his events in 19 months.
Oh, jeez.
I hired him personally, gave him $100,000 to coach me personally because I admired his energy and I respected the results he was getting and the impact he had on me. When I went there, I was doing recreational drugs. I was drinking way too much. I was partying way too much. I had some success in the material world. Thought I was a rock star, could do no wrong. And I was looking for the next high. So I go to a cocktail party, sneak off into the bathroom, you know, do something stupid, come back, and you think that you're bigger than life. So he helped me, in the drop of a hat, change those behaviors and move on to different choices. So I modeled him and I let him pour into me. But you see, a mentor loves somebody that will take action on their wisdom. All of us have a duty to pass our experience and wisdom on to other people. But if it falls on the ground, if it doesn't get absorbed, what's the point? It's no fun. You don't want to try to teach somebody who resists it and they go, well, yeah, I know that already. Oh, yeah, no, but, you know, you want somebody who goes, oh, yeah, tell me more.
yeah.
And if you actually look at, you know, I'm Canadian, so I'll give you a Canadian hockey metaphor. But Sidney Crosby, arguably the best hockey player in the world, actually played for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he lived with Mario Lemieux, who was arguably the best of his time.
Right.
There's no coincidence that he lived with him. It was in proximity, because proximity creates power. And Warren Buffett had a mentor. A lot of people don't know. So you've got to find somebody who has the result that you want, and then show up and then solve some problems for them. What can I do for you? How can you, you know, how can I solve problems? And then let them pour into you. I promise you, somebody shows up to me and they go, Rock, tell me, you know, how do I, like, I got this one guy in my mastermind group. He was working for GM. He's a DACA kid. He doesn't have his papers. So he created a corporation to work in for GM because he couldn't work for them as an individual. And when I met him, he was so enthusiastic. We went to this spa, and we all climbed in three cars, and one guy had to leave with a car to go on a conference call. And the only way we could all leave there was to put him in the trunk. And we're like, okay, we're all jammed in the car. We go, the only space left for you, Diego, is to get in the trunk. And he goes, no problem, I'm in. And that to me was like, he said yes, and he was willing to do whatever it took. I'm like, I'll pour into that kid.
That's awesome.
And since then, he now has 9 properties. He's financially free. He has more passive income coming in a month. He's 26 years old. In 4 years, we took his net worth from $30,000 to over $600,000. And this is the type of kid I'll pour into all freaking day long. If you've got that hunger and that willingness, no problem. I'll share with you my wisdom.
Wow. Did you feel like you got that from Tony Robbins as well?
So The root of it comes from the fact that when I went out on the farm and tried to get my my father's attention, he would send me out to do chores. And then sometimes I'd run back in and go, Dad, you know, I can't get the pipe to work. He goes, well, you got to prime the pump. And I go, yeah, but how do I do that? He goes, go out there and figure it out. I go, yeah, but if I knew how to do it, I would do it. He goes, no, figure it out. Think. Use your brain. And he would almost never give me the way, whether it was, you know, barbed wire fence, digging a hole in the freezing. He would challenge me to figure it out. When I got my report card, he goes, I don't want to see it. I go, but Dad, it's pretty good. He goes, I don't care. They're like, what do you mean? He goes, I want to know what you're applying. I don't care what you learn. What are you applying in your life? What did you, when are you, are you gonna measure that off and do the calculation in your head with numbers, or are you gonna pull out a calculator? Use your head. Learn, apply, learn, apply. I don't care about numbers. You can fake it through an exam. So I got to learn to apply, became incredibly passionately curious about learning. In fact, I think I'm a phenomenal student. Really, really good student. And I say that purposefully. The words that follow I am follow you. I am an amazing student. And I wish that everybody would learn to do that. We are living in a world that is changing so quickly that if you don't learn how to learn, you're screwed. Would you guys agree with me?
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, learn how to learn. Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, back in, that's something that I've struggled with my whole life, in the school settings. Cause I never learned how to learn. People learn on different levels. So, you know, there's auditory learners, tactile kinesthetic learners. Me, I never learned how to learn. And so I struggled constantly. And our mom, I remember the story. How old were we? I was like in fourth grade. You were in, must've been in seventh, and we were both struggling in school, and she propped in this old VHS cassette tape, Where There's a Will, There's an A, and she tried to make us, she made us watch it, but it didn't help me. It didn't help me at all. But yeah, you have to learn how to learn. It wasn't until recently where, you know, I'm starting to hang out with the people who I'm hanging out with, who I want to learn from, and like you said, just doing what they're telling me to do with passion.
Yeah, you're right. There's kinesthetic auditory. There's there's digital learners. There's people that learn, but we all do learn through doing. That's for sure. You know, when we all learned to walk, our parents didn't say, "Hey, look at that picture of somebody walking, and you got one shot at it. Oh, I guess you're a crawler." Right.
Right.
What they did is they said, "Just try, fall down, try." So, and anybody that's an entrepreneur that starts a business, they generally do everything for the first 3 years. Till they get lift off the end of the runway and their business is running, and then they try to do just the easy stuff. The people that are most successful continue to do everything or hire people and train them to do the parts that they used to do. But they maintain an everything attitude throughout the growth of their corporation. I have 36 streams of income, over 400 people that work for me. I'm dyslexic, I could barely spell, I'm the author of 3 books. I grew up on a farm with an identity of being stupid because my brothers and sisters laughed at me when I spoke most of the time, and I spent a lot of time not talking at all because I was afraid of failure. You can work your way through that by changing your programming and by saying, "I am every day in every way becoming more resourceful," or "I am every day in every way becoming a better communicator, a better speaker," taking a Dale Carnegie course, reading books. I read about a book a week. I listen to audio programs, podcasts. I'm in constant learning. The book I wrote called Your Epic Life Blueprint, my second book, the first, I have 10 rules in it. And rule number one is 30 minutes a day of, you know, personal development. And it should be minimum that. 30 minutes that you pour something new into your mind, a different perspective or point of view. Our minds have one job, and that's to protect us. And they do a great job, but they use a shitty strategy. They use a strategy called fear. So they go, "Oh yeah, but what if you get in that car and you bang it up? What if you park it? You know, you get a new car, you park it over there and somebody scratches it." You're constantly being faced with what if, and most people shrink to it. They shrink down, they play small, and they feel dead inside. My journey is about reminding people how freaking awesome they are, and don't apologize for being a beautiful soul that you are, right? And when you start to be around other people that don't want you to apologize for your uniqueness and your greatness, you start to feel more alive. And isn't this journey about being alive? It's not about surviving through to your death. Who wants to freaking do that? You want every day to be alive. You know, you want to walk into Starbucks to get your coffee and smile at a couple of people and pet the dog at the guy who's standing, you know, in line and say, "You got a beautiful dog," and put a smile on his face because everybody that has a dog is a dog lover. And then thank the girl that makes the coffee for you and walk out of there leaving a trace of energy that makes people feel better because you've done the work on the inside. That's the way I try to live my life. And then it ultimately comes back to you.
Yeah. How hard is it to reprogram your brain the way that you did? I mean, you've talked about mindset and affirmations and your mentor kind of planting that seed to view yourself differently than how you used to view yourself. But What are some of the actual tactical, practical strategies that you do? I mean, whether that's morning routine type of stuff, but kind of walk us through a little bit of that, some insight into that.
Yeah, great question, Chris. You know, the training's always in. You know, Usain Bolt, who won 10 gold medals, is now training to be a soccer player. He played his first soccer game. He scored 2 goals in his first game. And it's not at a high division yet, but it's at a minor league division. He is reinventing himself. So how hard has he worked at that? He's had to develop new skills. So it just depends on your ability to emotionalize your vision. You know, break that down, because what happens is most people, what do they think about? What they don't want. Mm-hmm. They don't want that shitty job. They don't want to pay a lot of taxes. They don't really want to work out. You know, they want to have life to be easy. Well, I got news for you. Life is not about being easy. Life is about you figuring out how strong you can be, how you can get yourself up off of the mat when life tests you, because champions are not staying down in the dirt. They face themselves in a big arena, and then they get back over and over and over and over again, up and up. So yeah, rituals, routines, for me, morning routine, the first hour is about the power of the day. I want to charge my mind and I want to charge my body. So it'll involve physical movement. I love to swim, bike, play golf, work out, do yoga, meditation for the mind. I'll read something inspirational or listen to something. I've recorded my I am statements that are 5.5 minutes long, and I will listen to them with really cool music in the background. And it's basically, I am about my whole life. Gifted, guided, grateful, powerful, passionate, playful, sexy, sensual, sensitive, and blessed. I am a leader. I am a source of inspiration for other people. And it goes on and on and on for 5 minutes. So I will charge my mind and remind myself of me when I'm at my best. But it doesn't always work every day to maintain that energy throughout the day. But if you don't start with that, you're going to react to the day. Mm-hmm. Your day's probably going to suck.
Yeah, I liked what you said there, because like most of us, we wake up and automatically we're in a reactive state. So getting that morning routine makes you proactive instead of reactive, which just, you know, sets the tone for the day.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that your mind can't hold two thoughts at the same time. So if you go into a place of gratitude, like God, I'm so blessed. Like I woke up this morning and I did, I did a podcast at 5 a.m. here in Arizona. And so I was up at 4:15. I did my little routine, got on the podcast, and I was actually felt so grateful. I was crying doing it because I felt such gratitude. I looked out over the mountains, the sun, the beauty, and I thought, I'm so fortunate. And so I'm going to allow myself to have that experience and feel so fully alive and wherever that brings me. I used to try to be like this super cool guy and have all my shit together and, you know, never cry and never be broken down. Now I want the rainbow of all the emotions. I want to play on all 88 keys of the piano. I want to have the highs and I want to have the lows. Yeah. I want to experience it all. So it's about being authentic and real. And, you know, I got a couple of lawsuits going on right now that are pissing me off, but I also have some amazing things that are happening too. That's just life. But how I show up to each one of those events is going to largely be based on what I do in the first hour of the morning. Am I pissed off, angry, resentful, mad at the world, people are taking advantage of me? Or am I going to use it as an opportunity for me to grow and learn? And I like to say to people, there's no winning and losing. There's winning and learning. So either way, step into it, because I love to win and I love to learn.
So you've got I am statements, but you also started this hashtag I am movement too, right? What's that all about?
Well, I think, Chris, a lot of people don't realize that they were given a label at some point in time in their life that they're too short, too tall, too skinny, too fat, too quiet, too noisy, whatever. And they start to wear it. And in fact, we look for evidence to prove it right. And if you walk into a party, or if you're part of a softball team or a golf club or whatever it is, you have a way that your peers are expecting you to behave. Maybe you're the funny one, I don't know. Or maybe you're the guy who never gets upset, or you're the person who always helps out clean up at the end of the party. Whatever it is, you have a way that's worked for you to survive in this world that your brain has come up with and said, when you behave that way, people like you. They like to have you around. And because we all want to belong and connect, the brain is searching for those strategies. Once it's discovered them, it wants to repeat them. So you get stuck in a pattern that might not be your authentic self. Maybe one day you cleaned up at the end of the party and somebody went, Chris, man, you are such a great guy. You're always willing to chip in and help out, man. I can't believe everybody else left and, you know, they just take advantage, left their shit over there and you're the best. And they pat you on the back and you're like, yeah, cool. For the rest of your freaking life, you're cleaning up at the end of a party.
Right.
Because of one event. So you went, I am helpful or whatever. So the I am movement is about casting some light on the labels that you have and recognizing whether they serve you or they enslave you. And then just revealing the possibilities for something new. So maybe you do want to help sometimes and maybe you don't. And maybe it doesn't matter that you're the quiet kid or maybe you're not the quiet kid. Somebody just caught you on 2 or 3 days when you were internal or you were a little sad, but now you break out of that. People said to me, you know, Rock, you're not playful. So I worked on creating an incantation around playfulness. I'm gifted, guided, grateful, powerful, passionate, playful, right?
Yeah.
And I was at this event. We were doing some presentations and I walked out by mistake. I didn't see this lampshade that I hit. And people cracked up because I looked kind of foolish. And I was really serious. And I was like, it's not funny. I felt embarrassed. And they go, I thought you were playful, Rock. And I went home that night and I thought about it. And I go, they're right. I'm not living into this new version that I'm working on becoming. I haven't yet spent enough time developing it to answer your question on how long does it take to change. So I went down the next day to the training. I grabbed the lampshade and I walked into the room with it on my head. And I did a little dance in front of everybody in the room. And I go, how playful am I now, bitches? Right?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of time on task. It's a matter of, you know, if you go, you know, I'm playful. I'm really playful. I'm playful. It's probably not going to happen. But if you're somewhere and somebody goes, hey, who wants to jump in the pool? It's freezing cold with all our clothes on. And you're the first person to do it because you chose to be playful. Then you start to create new files in your brain that overwrite the non-playful label. So how you do it? Intensity and repetition.
Damn. And sticking to it, huh?
Go ahead. So you have let's talk about money real quick.
Yeah.
From humble beginnings on the farm to 36 business streams of income, what can you tell us about the mindset of money? Like, well, how important is the, like, what you, how you feel about money? How important is that to actually making money in?
Yeah, super question. So we all have a money blueprint. Your money blueprint, if you want to know what it is, just look at your bank account right now, yeah. Or how much you make an hour right now, or what's the biggest check you can write right now. And sadly, in America, 76% of people, I believe it is, cannot write a check for $400 on the spot. It's just very, very sad because people have not been taught in school how to manage money and they live on credit, they get in student debt, so on and so forth, or they just live for the moment. There's a bunch of reasons. But we want to look at all behavior is based on a belief, and a belief is a feeling, a certainty based on evidence. So if, for me, the first 20 years of my life, I believed that life is about working hard. Later, I learned a new belief, which was about working intelligently, using your mind and your ability to communicate. And that's how I was able to become a very good salesperson. Sold 100 homes a year when the average agent sells 6. That's massively ahead of the field, massively. So anytime that you want to look at your money blueprint is if you don't have the money you want, it's not going to change. Sadly, it will not change unless you change your belief system. So when I meet people and they go, yeah, well, you know what? Money isn't that important to me, Rock. I go, you don't have any, do you? Because think about it. If health isn't important to you, you probably don't work out. If relationships aren't that important to you, when it gets difficult, you give up and you throw in the towel. So if money's not that important to you, you don't pay attention to it. And money's not going to stick around if you don't pay attention to it. So you've got to, you know, you've got to appreciate money. To me, money's energy. Money is stored labor in advance. So if I want to take some time off, I can access my previous stored labor and take time off to do what I want. In my mastermind group, I take people through 17 limiting beliefs around money. I'll give you an example. One is that most people are poor receivers. You notice that you say to somebody, hey, here's $100. They're gonna go like, why are you giving that to me? Instead of, oh, thank you, that's awesome. we're built where we feel like things shouldn't just be coming to us. And I'm not saying you should be in the secret and go, and then money's just going to show up. You know, good things come to those that help themselves. But there's an internal level of receiving that we all innately have. One of my good friends, my mentor, who's worth $100 million, he says in his rituals, he says every day he goes, I feel lucky. God, I feel so lucky. That's a regular statement he says to himself. And I play golf with him, and a golf ball hits the tree and bounces in the middle of the golf, the fairway. And he goes, I told you, I feel lucky. I just feel like good things are going to happen to me. So he's conditioned himself to have good things come to him. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other piece is that most people sadly feel that rich people are idiots and that they take advantage of people. So what they do is they don't bless things that they see. They don't bless a rich person. They go, that guy's probably an idiot. Probably took advantage of somebody, probably cut some corners or what have you. Now, there are rich people that do that. I've met some of them. But there are also rich people that are incredibly generous. So you are, money makes you more of what you are. But you've got to realize that money is about creating value in the world, as far as I'm concerned. So all the things I've done, online courses, I've created 40 whole life millionaires with my mastermind group, is because I create incredible value. I have got what Napoleon Hill calls specialized knowledge, right? In his 17 keys to successful people. And specialized knowledge is, Stephen Curry, how to throw a ball, or Michael Jordan, or Tiger Woods. They've got specialized knowledge in an area, or a lawyer, or a doctor, a dentist, or somebody that advises you in real estate. They have some information that you need to get a problem solved in your life. If you don't have any specialized knowledge in an area, you're going to be me for my first 20 years of your life. You're going to be driving a taxi, or you're going to be doing something just above minimum wage. It's when you pour yourself in an inch wide and a mile deep, you get that specialized knowledge, you add value, you show up early, you stay late, you continue to learn that you're going to excel somewhere. If you guys continue at this podcast and you keep on pouring in and getting better guests and keep on making it the best and add value, and send out the notes or whatever you guys do, then it's gonna grow and grow and grow, and you guys continue to be rock stars because you make it better. So having wealth is about adding value in the marketplace, but it also is highly connected to two things. Number one, your network creates your net worth. Your network creates your net worth of people you know. And number two is your self-worth is often linked to your net worth, sadly. So if you don't feel that you should ask for a raise, you probably won't. If you don't feel like you can gun it and go for the promotion, you probably won't. If you don't feel you can start a business and you can lead other people and you're able to learn and be mentored, you'll probably stay as an employee. So you got to do the personal development on your self-worth, and you got to get yourself in an environment with people that you admire and respect so you can work through their network and become successful.
Yeah. That's good stuff about network and masterminding and mentors. And how important is it to have colleagues like that? I mean, I know you've run with some of the biggest names out there, and I'll let you do the name dropping, but how important is it to find that group of people that you do mastermind and do work with?
Well, it might be the most important thing, Chris, because, the conversations you have with yourself are often fed by the conversations with the people around you. So if somebody shows up and, Chris, you're saying, I'm thinking of getting this investment property, and they go, oh, I think there's a market bubble, man, I wouldn't do that, that you've got to manage that energy. On the other hand, if they say, well, tell me about the deal, what are you looking at? What are some of the details? What's the revenue? What's the return? Well, they've got a language around investment that can support your journey there. So if you're around a lot of real estate investors like I am, we can share our deals or potential deals with each other, get perspective, get support, have them poke a couple of holes in it. Sometimes we'll say to somebody, hey, I'm working on this deal. I want you to rip it apart for me. And you send it to three guys. Tell me why I shouldn't do it. I think it's good, but you tell me why I shouldn't do it. And we do those favors for each other. And then each person gets to contribute to the success of another person. Make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm around a lot of people. I've got a group called GoBundance, 150 multimillionaires, and I'm going through a lawsuit right now with an ex-partner in real estate, and I've called a bunch of them up, and one guy's willing to mediate for me, another guy's giving me some advice, and I'm getting all of that support, you know, just from their wisdom and experience. So if you're not part of a group of people that is smarter than you, you're the smartest person in the room, you're the richest person in the room, you're the most energetic person in the room, you're in the wrong freaking room.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to grow. And life is about growing. Imagine being in a room with, you know, Warren Buffett and, you know, Steve Jobs when he was alive and Elon Musk and Richard Branson. What would the conversation be? It wouldn't be about the problems. It would be about the opportunities within the problems of the world. So when I created my mastermind group, I looked at what was missing and I saw people going to events like Tony Robbins and other events. And 2 months later, when they were back at home, nothing was changing because their ecosystem at home was polluted and they couldn't sustain the change because the people around them didn't get it. They weren't on the same page. And it's the story of the two crabs. A fisherman goes fishing, puts a crab in a bucket, the crab crawls out, throws the second crab in. What happens? As the first one goes to crawl out, the second one grabs it and says, no, I don't want to be left alone, and pulls him back. The fisherman doesn't have to put a net or nothing. He just puts two crabs together and they hold themselves back. And that's how most people live, unfortunately. 80% of people don't like their job. 60% of people are not, you know, living passionate and being, you know, being in the shape that they want energetically. Most people, 50% are divorced, and probably 90% of the people that are in relationships aren't really that happy. So what's the state of, you know, Western society? Pretty freaking depressed. They're addicted to something, right? They're addicted to drugs, painkillers, to alcohol, to pornography, to whatever. If most people are honest, which they're not, by the way, because we have a human need to look good, so we lie. Everybody lies. And if you don't believe that, then you're lying right now. Because sometimes in my seminars, I say, okay, everybody, in 5 minutes, we're going to have you all come to the front of the room one by one and tell us something you've never told anybody in the world.
Oh, man.
Your sickest secret, the thing that you don't want anybody to know. And then I just give them about 10 seconds and I go, how's everybody's heart rate doing right now? And people freak out. Because we're afraid. And the reason we're afraid is we want to be loved. And we believe that if we tell people the truth of who we are, the addictions we have, they're not going to love us because we're not enough. So it's an interesting dichotomy, is that you want connection and to belong with people, but you pretend to be something better than you are, which alienates you from people. It's when you're vulnerable and real that you actually connect, you get what you want, but it requires something called courage. And we're not taught to access that.
So is that the ego that is preventing us from coming out and just being vulnerable?
Yeah, 100%. The ego is like a cancer cell. If you have a cancer cell in your body, the cancer cell wants to live. Provided with an acidic environment, it will grow. If you remove the environment for a cancer cell to grow, it will not grow. The same thing happens with your ego. Your ego starts to find a way of being that makes it feel safe. And then it wants to maintain that. You know, I'm funny. So you go into places and you look to be funny. Why did Robin Williams kill himself? I'll tell you why. Is that most of his life, he wanted to connect with people through making them laugh. He got an incredible amount of joy by making people laugh. He was incredible at it. He spent all his time doing it. Then later in his life, he got diagnosed with Parkinson's and then some other disease. I can't remember the name. And his ability to make people laugh started to diminish. So if you watch the biography on him, they talk about that. So he was no longer able to make himself feel significant and connected through that skill. So he no longer felt like he belonged or could connect, so he killed himself. So the ego creates an identity, right? And then it wants to live. So when we take the I am movement, what I work on with people is say, remember, what parts of your identity serve you? You're loving, caring, compassionate, but you're also lazy, stupid, and not good with people. So we cross those labels out. We upgrade them to your higher self through visualization, meditation, and really asking yourself what you want. And then we pour into your vision through rituals and routines so that your money blueprint can grow, your passion blueprint can grow, your wealth can grow, all those things, your energy, your playfulness, whatever it is, and you move more toward that ability. And that's a fun project to do with people because you watch people actually get out of their self-imposed prison that they didn't know they were in.
Mm.
What do some of your coaching programs look like? Is this all conferences and get-togethers, or are you available online, or how do people get started with what you do?
So all of the above, all the way from you can go to rockthomas.com and get my free book, The Power of Your Identity, and start the process of reprogramming yourself, the 5 steps in my book, absolutely free. You can go to your Epic Life Blueprint Facebook community, and you can get some free Facebook Lives that I do. And then I have products that range from $67 up to $20,000, depending on whether you come to our events or you come with one-on-one coaching with me or through some of my coaches and some of my systems, my online products, etc. It just depends on where you're at. It's like I say to people, you could be having a junk food diet in your mind where you're going for a McDonald's trio, or you could be highly evolved where you're enlightened and you're eating, very healthy organic food. Wherever you are in your personal path is where you are. So we meet you where you're at, and it might be a free product. It might be a $67 product. It might be a $20,000 product that's going to get you to the next level. I spent $100,000 with Tony Robbins. I was ready for it. Wasn't really ready for it, but I wanted it. So I made myself ready for it. And sometimes people are skeptical about change. Their ego is hanging on so badly to, but you tried that before. You read that book. Nothing happened. You went to that seminar. You wasted your money. And they're so stuck in the story of it won't work. I don't have time to work it. I can't do it. That's for other people. They've been so conditioned mentally to believe that they won't even help themselves to give themselves a chance. And they'll happily spend $67 on a bottle of wine, or go to NASCAR for $300 or whatever it costs. I don't know, because they're so unhappy with their life. In the moment, they're going to do something that entertains them and takes them out of their pain for a short period of time. So unfortunately, a lot of people just aren't ready. And that's why so many people are unhappy and broke.
What is the, in your experience, what's the number one thing that's holding people back? Like, say they want to make a change. They're like, I'm going to download your free ebook and I'm just going to get started. But for some reason, they just can't break through.
So Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, I'm sure you guys have read it. A lot of people have read it. It's a classic. He talks about the fact that winners are decision makers, and that people that struggle procrastinate and wait and try to get more information and try to figure it out. So I teach my students to say yes and figure it out later.
Yeah.
And what's the worst thing that can happen? As an example, all my programs are guaranteed. So you actually could, the only thing you could lose is time. But most people waste a lot of time anyway. So you've got to first convince yourself of one thing, that you want more and you're willing to give it a shot. So that's the first thing you have to do, is say, do I want more in my life? And I've never met anybody that said, no, I have everything I want, even billionaires. I'm good, right? Where I stayed down in Bahamas, this guy had not one boat, he had two boats. The second boat was so big he couldn't even fit it into the harbor. He had to park it in the ocean. Okay. So I'm not talking just about that. I'm talking about more joy, more happiness, more peace, more fun, more connection, and more wealth. You got to first thing is convince yourself you want more. Then you have to ask yourself, what's my plan to get there? And if you don't have a plan, borrow somebody else's plan, right? Just success borrow somebody first. Else's plan. If you're so freaking skeptical, get a plan with a guarantee. So if somebody says, you can go to a Tony Robbins event and you can do the entire first day, and if you don't like it, you can get a refund. So there's no risk there unless you got to take an airplane ticket and get a hotel. But you got to take your foot off of first base to get to second base. The level of thinking that got you to where you are will not get you to where you want to go. So you're going to have to learn something. That we know. So just choose your teacher, your mentor, and say yes and figure out the details later. But there's two other things. Is usually people go, but Rock, you don't understand. I got 2 kids and 3 jobs and I just have no time. I have no time. By the way, I call that a time story. Okay, so let me ask you a question. You never watch TV. You're never in your car where you could listen to an audio program. You're never waiting in line or walking in through an airport where you could listen to a podcast or an audio program. Never, right? Bullshit. The average person waits 6 years in their lifetime in lines. 6 years in an average lifetime in lines. How much time do we spend looking at our freaking phone or screen waiting for it to log in and get online, right? And then yell at it because it's not working. It's like, it has to go to the satellite, dude. Relax, you know? Take a deep breath and say, I'm so grateful I have internet. And then let it load up. So time is another story. So I teach people my 7 steps to gaining 5 to 10 hours a week through a thing called the Sunday System for Success. So every time there's an objection people give me, I create a product because I go, there's an opportunity in that problem.
That's straight marketing.
You're telling,
smart. That's...
Right? If you're telling me you have no time, what if I gave you a method that gave you more time? Wouldn't that be valuable?
Right.
If you tell me you don't know how to make passive income, what if I showed you one of the 36 ways that I do it? Where I don't have to, you know, work if I don't want to. If your brain says no, it's because you probably think, well, I can't do it. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. Well, then you need to work on your mindset. And that's what I teach you. So you have to be able to take that first step, which is A, believe that there's a possibility it could work for you. Take a chance by saying yes and figuring it out later. And then the two things I talked about at the top of the call is bring your work ethic and bring your curiosity. The rest I can show you. I can't do those two parts for you, though.
Yeah. Outstanding, man. Well,
a bunch of notes here. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take the last 30 seconds to a minute and just let you wrap it up and take us home. Remind everybody what you do. And then more importantly, how everybody can get in touch with you and get started on their own journey with you.
Well, first of all, thank you guys for doing this and inviting me, because it's shows like this that are going to give people hopefully a chance to see a different perspective on how they can run their brain. The most important thing we do in life is running our brain, because that's the operating system for our life. Yeah. If they don't teach it in school. So once I got my mentors to teach me, and I've studied with Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and you know, Jack Canfield and Tony Robbins, I've gone to India on a meditation retreat. I've done rebirthing, and I've done sweat lodges, and I've done plant medicine in Costa Rica. I mean, you name it, I've pretty much done it and continue to search for, you know, the elixir of life. But in the meantime, you know, you got to start where you're at and find a place. It could be a great book. It could be coaching one-on-one, whatever the case may be. For me, people can reach me at rock@rockthomas.com, or they can go to my website, gom1.com, which is one of my mastermind groups, and just check it out. They'll get to meet some of the people in the community. They'll get on a call with somebody that's in the community and talk about the results that they've gotten. We've helped, frankly, people that have been $30,000 in debt, and now they're working as coaches in my organization, and their net worth 2.5 years later is $1.6 million. These are real stories. We have individuals that are single moms that went and, you know, applied for another job and took their income from $30,000 to $55,000. Because we gave them the belief and the confidence to do that. With people that couldn't lose weight for decades and finally put into an environment where actually people care to watch their progress, and they shed over 100 pounds. So it really depends on what people want, but either way, whether with me or somebody else, if you don't spend, you know, at least 30 minutes a day in personal development, you are going to be left behind. And I like to say to people, you know, in life, if you do what is easy, life will be difficult. Mm. If you do what is difficult, which is to work on yourself, then life will be easy. But difficult will come. And you don't want to do difficult in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. You want to do difficult as early as possible. And if you are in that age, let's get started right away. Because basically, most people have less and less energy the older they get. So let's get that going. Let's get you fired up and create some passive income so that you can do what you want with your time. And that's my mission in life, is to help people have time freedom. So the choice is to spend time with the people they love.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing all your wisdom, Rock Thomas. Thanks for coming on, Jonesville, man. Pleasure to have you.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Jones Zone Podcast with Chris and Brian Jones. We'll catch you on the next episode.